Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you like your comedy, Jet Black, and taboo busting, it's hard to look beyond one man.
A dog is not human. It's an animal. Nature doesn't care about them. It's sad but true. We're a dog's only friend.
Todd Solondz is a writer and director who's forged a career exploring the dark recesses of suburban America. Having won the Sundance Grand Jury Prize with his debut feature, Welcome to the Dollhouse, he then gained notoriety for Happiness, which explores themes including rape, paedophilia, murder, and suicide. Though controversial, it won numerous awards and established Todd's reputation as a witty, fearless, and challenging storyteller.
Dad, do you know how many inches your penis is?
Do you want me to measure?
I'm Edith Bowman, and you're listening to Soundtracking, a podcast released every Friday in which I speak to cinema's biggest names about how they use music in their work. We've already had the pleasure of Ben Wheatley and David Ayer's company and can look forward to hearing from Todd Phillips, Jon Favreau and Richard Linklater in the coming weeks. But this episode is all about Mr. Solondz. I caught up with him on the release of his latest offering, Wiener Dog. In it, he presents us with four episodes from the lives of different characters, united by their separate encounters with the eponymous Dachshund. As with all Todd's work, the narrative's bleak satire is offset by pathos, melancholy, and laugh-out-loud dialogue.
I think it's really great that you got a new dog, and it's so cute. What's its name?
Cancer.
Why would you name it that?
It felt right.
It demonstrates his passion for music too, featuring collaborations with Nina Persson and Devendra Banhart, who penned a song performed by a comic mariachi band during one of the movie's pivotal scenes. You'll hear that in a moment. But we begin with Wiener Dog's very own song, written by Emmy Award-winning composer Mark Shaiman and lyricist Scott Whitman. It was inspired by a country great and plays during an old-fashioned intermission in the middle of the film. Todd Solondz, an absolute pleasure, and I'm really excited to talk to you about music. Let's start off with Wiener Dog, and the dog's got its own theme tune, which is great. Was that something that came into your head in the writing process, or was it something you thought about during production?
Well, I had an interlude in mind from the start, and musically, I thought of Johnny Cash's song, The Ghost Riders.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw.
And I had known Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, and asked if they could do something in that spirit. And I described lyrically what I was looking for, and I'd worked with them before, and so they came through like that.
But on wagon and on foot, the pioneers began to roam, crossing mountains, forging rivers, on the quest to find a home. They all had band together, ah, but legends walk alone, on the trail for something better, and a place to call their own. Weeder dog, weeder dog, just looking for some shelter, and a place to rest her head.
It's wonderful how, with you and with all your films, the characters drive the story on. When you are thinking about music with your films, where does music fit?
It's funny, it depends on the movie. Some movies I know from the start what I'm looking for musically, and others I find it, I figure it out in the post period. With this one, I had four discrete sounds, because there are four stories. The first one I knew in the writing stage I was going to use Clair de Lune. In the second one, I didn't know how that was going to work, but I knew Nathan Larson and Nina Persson and had worked with them before, and felt that they would key into this, the quality I was looking for. So that worked out very nicely. And Devendra Banhart, of course, who...
Yes!
I've worked with him as well before, and I articulated exactly what I needed, and he gave me exactly what I wanted.
Una luna es un cuerpo, lleno de idiomas muertos. Él se acerca, yo me alejo.
For the DeVito section, I'd been thinking of him as a kind of Woody Allen-like character sound, or Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm as a reference, and so I came up with a Claude Bowling reference.
Work out. Lose weight.
I can't.
You're a ticking time bomb.
And then had a composer, which I discovered from my music supervisor. And when I came across it, I had a sense that this guy could come through.
From chatting to you, I know that you played piano when you were younger and cello as well. So you have a knowledge of music in your head and composition and things like that, which I imagine is useful.
It's true, I guess. My music background was helpful in just speaking the language that I think that musicians use. It's about finding the right balance, and I love figuring this out. But as I say, with each movie, it's different.
Yeah.
And this one, it was half certain things like Devendra. I knew I had to figure that out because I needed it before I shot. And the rest, I found it. I actually worked a lot with some temping, some Scriabin music, which was a reference for Nathan Larson. And he understood and was very keen on hearing that as a reference.
I kind of felt that when I first became aware of your filmmaking, that you used music very differently to other people. There's no one really uses music the same way as you. It's very subtle. It's not overused. It's like a colorscape almost, in a way.
Well, I think when you use music, you want it either to accentuate something that's already there on screen and take it to another emotional level, or it can serve as a kind of counterpoint to what you see on screen. The one thing you don't want is just to repeat what you already have on screen. In fact, the fourth story doesn't have any music except for one journey-like song. I love working with musicians. I do. I don't know if they love working with me, but I love this part of the process.
La, 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 la.
I love refining and articulating in ways with your composer your needs and the ways in which it delivers or goes off course. It's always a leap of faith, though, because you're talking in abstractions about music, and it is the most immediate emotional response that people have. Temp music, the temp you choose, is a great guide for your composer. I think on an earlier film back on Palindromes, when I worked with Nathan Larson, I used a score from Rosemary's Baby, and that explained to him what I was looking for, the quality I needed.
Yeah.
And so it was less of me giving some speech and more nudging in those directions.
Yeah. Mention Rosemary's Baby there. Is that something that you're real fan of, is music, you know, in film, as a film fan, as someone who watches films?
I love a good score. I love music I love. And yes, if I think I may have said earlier, if I had the talent, I'd be a musician. I suppose the one silver lining is that if you're a musician, in some sense, it's your job. But for me, it's not a job. It's just all pleasure.
I love the fact that I think I heard you say that your first two films that you saw were musical films, Mary Poppins and Sound of Music. Very different use of music in film, but quite brilliant.
Well, I don't know how, as a little boy, I was taken to those movies at Radio City Musical. It was a big event.
Wow.
And they stayed with me, and I tormented my siblings with my continued singing every time we'd get in the car. Just shut up. I just shut him up. That's what they would say.
Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with a moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad.
That was magical for me, because I was not a cinephile. I was just a regular kid who went to the occasional movie that was a family children's movie, nothing that had any adult material. I don't think I was allowed to until I was off in college, you know. But growing up, classical music is what I listened to and was absorbed by, though I was aware of pop from my older siblings. You know, the funny thing about music is that it's often very much tied into one's social milieu, and there's a certain kind of status that often gets attached to the kind of music one is listening to, and judgments are so often made.
Teenage Mary said to Uncle Dave, I saw my soul must be saved. Gonna take a walk down Union Square. You never know who you're gonna find there. You gotta run, 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 run. Take a dagger too. Run, 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 run. Gypsy death in you. Tell you what to do.
If in fact you, someone actually saw your most played songs, it would be like the great humiliation. That's what you're really listening to? I thought you were just Lou Reed, and then I see you've got this secret thing for Petula Clark.
My love is warmer than the warmest sunshine, softer than a sigh. My love is deeper than the deepest ocean, wider than the sky. My love is brighter than the brightest star that shines every night above. And there is nothing in this world that can ever change my love.
Barry Manilow, Mandy.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. It's one of those things where a song comes on and you don't even realize that you know all the words to it.
I'm actually very bad with lyrics. In fact, I tend to be so overtaken by the sound of the music. The music is so powerful. I could be singing some Nazi anthem, but I only realize it after the 100th playing. I said, oh, my God, what is this song about?
Happy people pass my way. Looking in their eyes, I see a memory I never realized. How happy you made me, oh Mandy. Well, you came and you gave, well, I'll take it. But I sent you away, oh Mandy. Well, you kissed me and stopped me from shaking. And I need you today.
Music has such a visceral impact.
Yeah.
You have to know that balance of lyric and music, what the audience is going to hear and what's important, what they need to hear and what they don't need to hear.
You've used some wonderful artists. Belle and Sebastian,
yeah,
being one of them. Was that through you being a fan of the band that you wanted to...
Someone had introduced them to me, and I loved the sound, and it seemed right for the characters, protagonists in that section of the film. And I really was astonished that they were keen on what I do or what I did. And I guess all nine of them came over and recorded something in material in New Jersey, in Hoboken, I think. It was funny because they did compose a lot of stuff, and there was a difficult situation because sometimes they would compose things that would be really wonderful, but just because I love the song doesn't mean it's right for the movie.
Yeah.
And that was a difficult thing, I think, for them to appreciate. And I think we're a little frustrated because I would say I love it, but not use it. Hard to accept the idea that something can be really good, but that doesn't mean it's really right. I'd love to have worked with Marlon Brando, but I didn't have the part for him. There are a lot of great people I'd love to work with, but if they're not the right person, not the right sound, then you can't use it. Doesn't make sense.
Oh my God, Scooby. I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry.
Don't be. Your movie's a hit.
I mean, ultimately, I got what I needed, and I'm happy with everything we got, but I think it was a learning curve.
You're just a storyteller, you're not trying to escape responsibility. If we believe you, then you're successful, but you don't.
Can we talk talk about a couple of your other films, specifically about kind of music in them? I mean, Welcome to the Dollhouse, which, you know, you've got that wonderful use of classical, whether it be Chopin and Tchaikovsky that's in there. What was the kind of thinking behind how you wanted to use music within Welcome to the Dollhouse?
That was scary because the score, such as it was, I had a musician, a friend, who composed these songs in advance of the shooting, but the score itself, well, it was easy enough to, I used Carnival of the Animals, I think, at one point, and Defia for some ballet, and that was easy enough to figure out. But the score, that sound when Dawn Wiener's sitting alone on her bed, I needed a certain kind of intensity, and my composer just jammed it right there in the minutes before we were mixing the movie. It's always very stressful because I had no fallback, but she totally delivered. That was Jill Wisoff. But it's always scary with music. I've been lucky so far.
Hi, Missy, is Dawn home?
Yeah, but she can't play. She's punished.
The performances you get out of your young actors is phenomenal. Heather Matarazzo played young Dawn. Just such a memorable performance.
She was a natural, and it was really a question of, like, give me a little bit more, a little bit less. She was a gifted child.
When you say he'd go out with any girl, as long as they're willing to go all the way, does that mean they have to also be pretty?
You know Tammy Steinfeld from Carpool?
Yeah.
Okay, do you think she's pretty?
Not that pretty, really.
Dawn, she's a dog. And he did it with her.
The one who played her little sister was not. But what I did at the audition was I found she could mimic a line reading. And that's what I had her do, in fact. So everything she did was a line reading that I would give her the line reading. She would mimic it back to me. So as artificial as that was, you would never know it because I just cut myself out. So with every kid, with every actor, it's a different approach you may need in order to get something that's going to feel truthful. I adapt. If an actor wants me to hold their hand, I'll hold their hand. If they say, don't talk to me, I don't. Okay, peace, you know. So it's always about being adaptive to the needs of your actors because they're the most important thing.
It seems the things I've wanted in my life I've never had. So it's no surprise that living only leaves me sad. Happiness, where are you? I've searched along for you. Happiness, what are you? I haven't got a clue. Happiness, why do you have to stay so far away from me?
You know, you talk about casting and stuff, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in Happiness with his complete infatuation with the woman and getting that chemistry right. Is that an obvious thing straight away for you in terms of when you're casting it?
Nothing's obvious to me. I feel there's so much luck. I go on instinct. I have material that I feel has a certain charge to it, and I have an instinctive sense of what these actors can bring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a leap of faith.
I don't know I could ever really begin to talk to her. I mean, what can I talk about? I have nothing to talk about. I'm boring. I know. I've been told before, so don't tell me it's not true, because it's a fact. I bore people. People look at me and they get bored. People listen to me and they zone out, bored. Who is that boring person, they think? I've never before met anyone so boring.
Phil had read for me, this is years ago,
yeah,
and I think I was in love with his clammy handshake, and that's really what sold me. I mean, I had a callback with him because his first reading I wasn't so happy with, and my auditions, they are my rehearsals. And once I knew what I could get out of him from that audition, I wasn't worried. I just had to give him that confidence so he could make that leap of faith, that trust in me, that he wouldn't feel embarrassed and ashamed of this performance.
Yeah.
Because he was dealing with stuff that was very difficult.
Hello?
I know who you are, and you are nothing. You think you are something, but you are nothing. You are empty. You are a zero. You are a black hole, and I'm going to you so bad you're going to be coming out of your ears.
That's the thing you have to embrace head on. And I say, you know, don't ever try to be funny. Leave that to me. I don't want irony from you. I'll take care of that. What I want is an emotional grounding, truthfulness and authenticity, all of that from them.
Yeah.
And then I place it in another context, which gives it other meanings.
Yeah. Last thing before I let you go, unfortunately, on Welcome to Dollhouse, that scene where Brendan and Dawn head off on what you think is going to be an ordeal. You yeah. used music so perfectly in that. Which
yeah, that was Grieg. It was a piece of Grieg's that I found. Because I wanted to, in the same way that I used some Mozart aria from Così fan tutte with Phil Hoffman, you want to go and counterbalance the sordid with the sublime. Here, this is a 13-year-old kid who is threatening to rape an 11-year-old girl. And so I gave it this very beautiful classical operatic sound. And it's that friction and that counterbalancing effects that really can be so beautiful.
It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for Wiener Dog. It's an absolutely beautiful film. It stayed with me 4 or 5 days after seeing it as well. I'm still sort of thinking about things from each kind of little vignette. So I can't wait for your next project.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As used by Todd Solondz during Welcome to the Dollhouse, that Solvig song by Edvard Grieg. My thanks to Todd for taking the time to talk to us on the release of his latest film, Wiener Dog. Now, you can find a track list for this show by heading to edithbowman.com, where you can also subscribe to this podcast so as you don't miss a single episode. We also have a dedicated Facebook page and Spotify account, which allows you to hear the music we feature in the order it appears. I'm Edith Bowman, and you've been listening to Soundtracking, our weekly celebration of music in film, out every Friday. For our next installment, I'll be joined by the man behind the Hangover trilogy, Todd Phillips, whose new film War Dogs is based on the extraordinary true story of two highly unlikely arms dealers. He loves his music and is very entertaining. So I look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.